This is the Living Fearless Today podcast, a show that helps men like you and me who are struggling to get unstuck and overcome fear to live confidently and courageously. I'm your host and transformation coach, Mike Forrester, helping you create the change you want now. Join me as I interview men who've conquered their challenges and soared to success as they spill their secrets on how they live fearless today. Well, hello and welcome back, my friend. This week, Jonah Primo is joining me, and Jonah's got an amazing story of being able to find the resilience, finding, you know, when you're in that place of chronic pain, right? That long-term pain, you may or may not have like a way to deal with it, but it's going to be something that is going to impact us. And Jonah has found a path back to being healthy physically and mentally, you know, not looking and going, hey, I'm the victim here. Woe is me. Jonah has taken things into his own hands. And I really want you to see the hope that can come from those unexpected situations, you know, and you're not just left alone, nor are you left helpless. So Jonah's got a very inspiring story, very relatable story where it's kind of one of those of like, oh my gosh, Jonah, come on. Like, are you reading my mail? So super excited to get in with Jonah today. Jonah, how are you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing really well, Mike. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Absolutely. Happy to jump in here and talk about this because you and I have done a little chatting beforehand and it's like, man, there is so much that just resonates and I can connect with in your story because it's like we all have challenges that we face, man. But, you know, when we're not talking, when we're not sharing what we've gone through and what, you know, where we're at, we can kind of feel isolated and just, you know, one against the world. So
it's lonely. Being sick is lonely.
Oh, totally, dude. Especially when it's like you're in your head all day and you're facing those thoughts, man. And sometimes they are super challenging and just, you know, worst case scenario, I would say, you know, like, it just, yeah, lonely is a great way to put it, John. Well, let's jump off and start in with what does life look like for you today on the professional side of things, man?
Yeah, well, I have the incredible privilege of being able to podcast full time professionally. And you know, I write and I write music, and these were all things that I always wanted to do and always wanted to make work, and they're working, which means that I get to, you know, wake up excited for the day. And
that's awesome.
I play a whole bunch of sport. I train all the time. You know, I'm living my best life, but I had to, you know, enter into the abyss to come out of it. So
yeah, I can understand that. What about on the personal side of things? What does that look like for you?
Yeah, well, again, it's just things are good, but they're good because of a lot of work and a lot of practice. In the philosophy space, I've been studying and reading for nearly 10 years. In the mindfulness space, about 6 or 7. And there's been a lot of meditation. There's been a lot of interviews. I've talked to a lot of great neuroscientists and, you know, gurus, monks, Sam Harris, Jitendra, like some fantastic people I've had the privilege of interviewing. And it's every time I do, I learn something. I learn something about the human condition, and I learn something about how to live a good life, how to live a moral life, and how to live a life where I limit my pain only to the unavoidable suffering. And I don't lump in that unnecessary suffering on top of it. You know, we're very good at adding in a whole bunch of unnecessary suffering because something bad happens. Okay, so we all go through bad things. Life throws us punches. But then we ruminate, we're anxious, we're fearful, we think about the past, we think about what's going to happen in the future. And there's a whole extra pile of suffering that we don't need. And so I guess things personally are good because more and more I'm able to limit things at just the unavoidable suffering.
Man, yeah. And that's very different. Like the path that you had gotten to, Jonah, I mean, there's a big transition there.
Yeah.
Let's start out from like where things were, because it's like, dude, you were playing soccer, you were running, life was on course, you know, kind of as planned. And then health-wise, things kind of just unexpectedly took a hiccup, and that really derailed things quickly.
Yeah.
Can you kind of take us back and share what happened and like how disruptive life got for you?
Of course, Mike. Yeah, sure. So basically, you know, as you said, I was a very active person. I was extremely fit. I have never been good at sitting still. I, you know, would run four times a week, rack up, you know, 100 Ks. I'd play soccer three times a week. I was just moving all the time. And I assumed that that meant that I was a healthy person. But I was actually quite wrong about that, as I've seen in hindsight. I was healthy physically, but not mentally at all. And basically, a combination of a few things happened. I got COVID. Wasn't the biggest deal. This was like 5 years ago. I got COVID, and then right after COVID, maybe about 2 weeks after I first got it, I went on a 130-kilometer hike with PAX, which is about 80 miles, just a long walk, 5 nights. And then right after that, I got the worst flu I've ever had in my life. And between those three things, you know, it just took a lot out of me. It took a lot out of me. And I assumed that was normal. It sounds normal when you do a lot of activity and you get sick twice in a short amount of time. So I was like, okay, what I'll do is I'll do what any sort of active, health conscious person does: quit alcohol for a month, drink vegetable smoothies, rest, take a few weeks off, you know, running. But nothing got better. So I was having these sort of daily headaches. I was getting dizzy. I had no energy. And no matter what I did in the health world, I wasn't improving. If anything, I was getting sicker. And, you know, it got to the point where I was just like, you know, I kept trying to start my life up again without dealing with my sickness. So I'd go, okay, guys, I'm fine. I'll come on in game day. But then like 15 minutes in, I'd have to substitute myself. And, you know, I kept trying to run, and I'd just be wheezing and coughing and trying to push through it and being like, no, you can do this. You can do this. But I couldn't. I couldn't. So I went to some GPs, you know, doctors, and they couldn't figure out what was up. They sent me to some neurologists, some cardiologists. I did blood tests, scans, MRIs. Didn't have a brain tumor. Didn't have a problem with my heart. But I had, you know, very low white blood cell count. And this was around the time where doctors and stuff were starting to talk about long COVID or COVID long hauling. But they didn't really know what that meant. So they said, look, we don't know what's wrong with you. We don't know how to treat you. And we don't know how long you're going to be sick for. We think you have long COVID, but we don't really know what that means. So I got diagnosed with essentially a disease that nobody understood. And I'd say that was the worst thing that could ever happen, because I was essentially left thinking I had a vague but serious disease that could encompass any symptom and had no clear or tested route to recovery. So my unconscious mind had this blank canvas to paint whatever dark picture of suffering it wanted to. I started seeing everything as evidence that I was getting sicker. because my mind was playing tricks on me. And I was sick. Like, I was having migraines every single day. I was dizzy. But I had no idea what to look for. I had nothing to hope because no one could give me any hope. And so I looked for everything. Everything was evidence that things were getting worse. I had nothing to cling on to. So in order to try and recover, my doctors were saying rest, more rest, more rest, more drugs, benzos, strong stuff, migraine stuff. And what happens when you get into these dark sort of cycles of thinking you're sick, believing you're sick, and believing you're getting sicker, is that your world contracts. It gets smaller and smaller and smaller. So, you know, gave up alcohol, fine. Gave up caffeine. Then I gave up sport. Then I stopped going to parties. Then I stopped working. And this was all in an attempt to recover. But eventually, you just become someone who barely exists. You're a ghost. You're just a ghost in your room. And I mean, I'm contracting this story, but this is obviously over the course of a year. This is a long, steady decline. And I'd say my rock bottom was when I got up one day feeling inspired. I got up one day feeling inspired and I was like, you know what? I'm a fit guy. I don't care what anyone says. I'm a fit young person. I'm going to at least walk around the block to prove that I can do something of value. And my house has this big slope. So I walked down the hill and I turned around and I looked back up and it looked like Mount Everest. This was a tiny hill. Now, like, I realized in that point, you know, I'm running like sub 40 10Ks and I can't go up a hill. Like, what's going on? This is how far I've fallen. No, I'm going to climb this hill. So I started walking up this hill and the dizziness, the migraines kicked in and I fell and I realized I couldn't get up. And I didn't know what to do. I was in broad daylight and I couldn't get up a tiny little hill. And so I crawled up this hill on my hands and knees. People must have thought I was on some crazy drugs or whatever. But this was just me trying to do the most basic human thing, just to walk. And I crawled through the gate, up the stairs, into my bed, and I decided then and there, I'm going to stay in bed forever. I'm going to call off my engagement. I'm too pathetic. I'm a burden. I'm a waste of space. I've had enough. I'm going to sit here and read and watch TV for the rest of my life. I don't care. I'll just get disability checks. I don't care. I'm over it. So that's basically the bottom of the parabola. That's where the arc goes. But that's how bad it got. And my life became nothing.
I can relate with the frustration in there, Jonah. And I know on my side, like, I'm not running 100Ks. Haven't gotten there yet. but it's like, there is that frustration when, you know, I'm running a 5K, right? Mm. And my knee, the pain comes and it's just like, give me a break. Like, I know I've been able to do this. What's wrong? Mm. Pull it together, Mike. So you're frustrated at yourself, but there's also, I know for me, there's like this almost expected performance. Like, I feel like others are looking at me and expecting me to perform at a certain level and I can't. So there's that shame.
Yeah.
What kind of emotions were going through that? Because I mean, you're retracting, Jonah. Like, you're pulling away from not just society, but you're looking at saying, I'm done with my engagement. What kind of emotions were like taking hold of you at that time?
I think you've put it really well, Mike. I mean, shame is a big one. It's, you know, if you care about sport and you can't perform for your team, you feel shame. And then as things get worse, when you're not able to drive yourself to an appointment, like when we moved houses and I wasn't able to help carry the couch, I wasn't able to do anything. I just was like looking at my fiance who just spent days doing all the housework, doing on top of her job, like doing everything. And I'm just like sitting there watching TV while the world happens around me and people are caring for me. I was lucky that I had a good network, but it doesn't matter. I didn't want the network. I just wanted to be left to kind of rot away. Like it is, the shame is so strong. And you have this sense that you're pathetic. You're pathetic. And I think you summed it up well.
Well, and so in going from there, Jonah, like that can feel like your identity. You know, like when you lose a job, right? You're kind of at that crossroad of now, who am I? Mm-hmm. When that chronic pain comes along, how do you determine who you are? I mean, did it almost become one of those of this is just who I am? And I'm, as you said, like I'm pathetic, or was there something beyond that?
It's a great question because it was when I started associating myself in this with people in the chronic pain world that I realized I needed to fight back. I remember I went on some Discord forum and it was for people with chronic pain. And like, you know, there's nothing wrong with people who find support networks. That's great. But I went on to this and everyone was just talking about their pain all the time. And I realized that it had become their entire personalities. And it was just about like, you know, finding a way to drink this random herbal tea that maybe you feel a bit of relief or whatever. It like their whole lives became this. And they were just sitting on the internet, smoking weed and chatting about, you know, obscure health remedies. And I realized like, I don't think that I want to be one of these people just yet. I'm not ready. I'm not ready to say my life is chronic pain and I'm not ready to completely give up. Even though there were days where I gave up, there was something in me that just said, no, you know, you're 27. There's more to life than this. There has to be. You need to find a way. It's too early to call it. So, yeah.
And was that, because I'm sitting here thinking, Jonah, that's a long time to kind of be like looking at, hey, I'm going to be bedridden. How do you stand up and fight when it's like you've been fighting and you feel like you've been knocked down? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I'm not going to be identified by this challenge that I'm facing. I'm not going to just sit here and relinquish my life, but instead I'm going to fight and I'm going to figure this out. Like, how did you find the strength to start that fight and not, like you were talking about, holding on to the identity like other people you saw online doing?
Yeah, yeah. So the first step was I'm going to change my medical team. I'm going to change all of them. I'm going to get a new neurologist. I'm going to get a new cardiologist and just see if there are different opinions out there. And I did get a new neurologist. She was really a dizziness specialist. And I'd seen all this cool stuff about her online. She seemed to have a slightly different vibe. And I went and chatted to her and I was like, look, this is the situation. And I told her my story about crawling up this hill. And I was like, it's the worst thing that ever happened to me to be publicly humiliated like that, to crawl up a hill in broad daylight. It's the worst thing that ever happened to me. And she said then and there, looking me in the eyes, she said, okay, you're going to try again tomorrow. I said, what are you, insane? Are you completely insane? I just told you this was the worst thing that ever happened to me. And she said, did it kill you? And I said, well, I guess I didn't literally die. It killed me emotionally. And she said, so it didn't kill you. So try again. And if you fall over, you fall over. And if you have to crawl again, you have to crawl again. And if you have a terrible migraine because of it, you have a terrible migraine. If it's the worst day of your life, it's the worst day of your life. You've survived the worst day of your life before. You'll survive it again. So go. Go out there. And she said, I don't want you to live in fear of pain. I want you to accept the pain and live the way you want to. She said, I'm cutting you off on all the benzos, the anti-anxieties, the migraine medication. She said, I'm cutting you off. You're too young. You're already addicted. Enough's enough. And we need to draw back. You need to start being a strong young person again. And you have pain. You have chronic pain. You have migraines every day. It's crippling. I know it's crippling. But go out there and have a party. Go out there and drink a beer. You know, have a coffee. Like, try and live your life a little bit. And if you need to lie down in the middle of a party, lie down in the middle of a party. Just stop avoiding everything and start living with the suffering. And so that was a huge turning point for me, because I was like, okay, I'm going to go to this dinner party. I'm going to go to this wedding, and I'll just take an hour or two out when the pain gets too bad, as opposed to not going at all.
Wow. That is a full 180 degree different perspective on things. So the next day comes, she has told you, go out and do exactly what happened on your worst day. How did it go coming back up the hill?
What didn't go well? I mean, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. And I was back on my hands and knees. But the difference was I had made some small degree of progress. And I knew that. I knew that. I knew that I was going to just keep trying until I could get up it. And I was going to try and walk around my garden. And then every time I tried it, it triggered a migraine. I ended up in bed for 4 hours, but I'd got a couple of steps further and I walked a couple more times around my garden. Like, I slowly was aggregating these achievements. I've been doing nothing for 6 months. So walking around the garden is suddenly exciting, and walking around twice is incredibly exciting. And I was like, okay, so there's progress. And I'd go to a party and I'd have to go lie down after a couple of hours. But hey, I was at a party for a couple of hours. The old me never turned up in the first place. Every time I did this, I made some degree of progress. And, you know, there's a couple of other things that I hope we talk about, but you scale up incremental progress over a year and a half, all of a sudden you're a normal person again.
That's the one thing. It's like, you know, I don't want to be normal. We fight so hard not to be normal, and now we're wanting to be normal.
I know. When that becomes the goal, you've been in a dark place.
Before you went to see her, it sounds like, you know, the beginning of the journey, it was almost like this decline as far as physical ability. And then you're starting kind of from like bottom, Jonah, yep. Where it's like, I haven't done anything. So it sounds like almost on the physical side, you had more of a challenge, like after you saw her and she put that, you know, kind of just gave it to you straight to your face, right? Of go do it. Yeah. It's not going to kill you. It doesn't sound like it was a physical thing that really changed. And in fact, you probably had more adversity or more of a challenge to overcome. Was it a change in like your perspective, your mindset, hope? Like, what helped you to see things that I'm going to see this incremental progress as a good thing instead of like what I can't do, I'm seeing what I can do? What changed?
Well, Mike, you've summed it up perfectly with the word hope. She gave me hope. She said, we're going to build you back up. She didn't say rest. She didn't say try this different drug. She said, We're gonna pull this off. So there was suddenly this degree of belief that I could come full circle to who I wanted to be without necessarily knowing what the actual disease I had was. She wasn't concerned with what I actually had. She just accepted I had what I had. She didn't know how to fix it, but we're gonna try and give me a life worth living. And so there was hope. And again, I changed all these sort of things about my medical team. Like I went to a dizziness therapist. I'd never heard of that. In fact, I just wasn't interested in therapy. I just didn't think I needed it, the classic line. But I went to a dizziness therapist who started explaining the science of these dizziness attacks that I was having. And she sort of showed me this diagram of my brain and said, you're living in a state of constant fight or flight. You're constantly looking for signs that a migraine's starting. Everything to you is a threat. And you're actually living in your amygdala, which is the part of your brain that's responsible for fight or flight. And it's sending these shock waves through your sympathetic nervous system. And the way that the sympathetic nervous system works is it draws energy from the parasympathetic nervous system, which is responsible for things like balance, digestion. And so when you don't have energy in the parasympathetic nervous system and you have it in the sympathetic nervous system, of course you feel sick. Of course you can't balance. There's no energy there for your body's basic functions, for just the regular faculties. And as I found, as I started to learn this, it helped me understand that when I was having a vertigo attack, like a dizziness attack, if I just recognized that I was panicking, instead of thinking about all these things, oh, this is going to be the rest of my life, I'm never going to be able to stand up, look how far I've fallen from grace, et cetera, et cetera. If I just go, okay, you're panicking, you're dizzy, then you stop panicking and you become a little less dizzy. And so the energy sort of goes back to those basic functions like balance, and then you can balance. So it actually started to reduce my symptoms, and that's an entire mental journey. There's no drug there. That's just a mental journey. So between that and the fact that I'm realizing I can have some kind of semblance of a life through my neurologist, I'm starting to have, again, these improvements each day. And I'll talk about one more thing, which was really important to me, the thing that maybe triggered searching for a new team and looking for this new way of life. And that was gratitude and philosophy. I studied a lot of philosophy in this time, and I realized that, you know, despite where I was and despite the fact that I felt like my life wasn't worth living, in a relative sense, I still had an incredibly privileged and great life. I mean, there's people with chronic pain in the middle of war zones. What the hell do they do? I am in a rich country with, you know, almost all my healthcare was free. I have this network of people who care about me, who want me to feel better. So I have friends, I have family, I have access to specialists, I have all this stuff to be thankful for. And hey, even when I can't walk around the garden, I could sit in the garden and look at a beautiful blue Australian sky, listen to the birds chirping. There is so much to be thankful for. There is so much life to be lived, even if it's not the life I planned for myself. It could be a hell of a lot worse. And when I stopped having this endless pity party and started being really grateful, all of a sudden, again, the symptoms come down a little bit. They just do. They just do. It's like magic.
I find it really interesting. It's not like you're negating or saying this health challenge isn't here. You're doing it in spite of it, and you're looking for the things that you can do to celebrate. I know gratitude is there, but I guess in my mind, I'm like looking at it, hey, this week I took 3 more steps than I would have before. Dude, when you couldn't take those 3 steps before, that is a reason to celebrate. Mm-hmm. What are you doing that is helping you from like the gratitude and the philosophical side? I know you've also, you know, mindfulness was a big thing for you. What are you doing that's kind of suppressing or turning away from the fight or flight and being, you know, like, oh my God, there's a tiger, you know, to, hey, I'm at peace. I'm calm. I'm not worrying about the fact of I'm going to have a migraine. I'm going to feel all these things. Like, what are you doing to set yourself up for success in the knowing that, yes, this is going to be a challenge. You're still betting on yourself, Jonah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny you say mindfulness, because mindfulness is the top of the umbrella. Mindfulness is what allows you to fight back against your thoughts. So if I'm having a pity party, I can't access the gratitude unless I'm mindful that I'm feeling sorry for myself. So mindfulness is how you go, I'm having this thought that I'm a failure. I'm having this thought that I'm pathetic. I'm having this thought that I'll never be able to live a proper life. Any thought that I have, the faster you can recognize that you're having a negative thought, the faster you can use something from your toolkit to combat that thought. And now the power of that is, from philosophical to attitude to physical. So if you're having a panic attack, that's a physical experience. But mindfulness allows you to notice you're having a panic attack and say, I'm having a panic attack, instead of what you do when you're having a panic attack, which is thinking, I'm dying. I'm going to die right now. And it doesn't matter what anyone else says. You know, I mean, people who've had panic attacks, I'm sure there's lots listening. You can have a panic attack. When you've had one, when you have your first one, it really does feel like a problem. When you have your 200th one in front of your wife, she just says, you're having a panic attack. And you go, no, I'm dying. This time's real. Call an ambulance. This time it's real. But you need to be able to get to a point where you can be your own wife in that sense and just say, you're having a panic attack. Take a step back. It's going to pass. If you're in a situation where you go, I'll never be able to live a good life. If you're mindful, you can go, oh, that's a negative thought. That's something passing through me. I'll just wait till it goes. It's not helping me. I'm thinking about the future. I could be enjoying the clouds passing over me. I could be enjoying my kids, you know, wanting to play with me. I could be enjoying all these things that are happening right now, all these beautiful, wonderful things that are happening right now. You need to be able to recognize that you're thinking about the past or the future, or you're being negative, or you're angry or anxious. If you can't recognize that, then you have no hope. Then you are the thought. So,
yeah,
it's a powerful thing. But unfortunately, it takes a little bit of work to get good at. And I, you know, as I said, I've been meditating for a long time. So I had a predisposition to being able to tap into this. I lost a lot of that meditation. Like, in fact, the time I've meditated the least was when I was in this dark place. But I was meditating before that. When I got back into it, I had some of this muscle memory already. And meditating helps you get better and faster at recognizing that you're having a thought. We spend most of our life in a thought, as opposed to experiencing the present. We're just walking around, we're going in the shops. You can go to the shops, you can see nothing. You can just be in your head the entire time. And you come back, you can drive. I've driven to another city and just realized I'm in another city. And I'm like, I don't remember any of the experience of driving here. I was just thinking about work the whole time.
Yeah, you're just grateful. That's one of those gratitude practices of, thank you that I stayed on the road. I didn't hit anybody. Yeah. You know, it's like I zombie drove to where I'm at.
Exactly. But if you meditate a little bit, and you don't have to meditate for a long time, but if you just start to practice recognizing your own conscious experience, you'll be able to turn off this endless tap of negativity.
And I want to kind of plug into that meditation aspect here in just a moment. I want to ask one question first. And I know, Jonah, like when I'm in pain, it's like I almost forget about the world and how my experiences are impacting it, right? My wife, my children, coworkers, friends, everybody around me is being impacted by what I'm going through.
Yep.
You'd shared at one point that Izzy, who's your wife now, when she was your fiance, like, hey, I'm going to go lay on the bed. I'm just done. I'm calling it off. She doesn't need to go through this. You know, she stuck it out, man. Like, when you look at your relationship along the path, when you were kind of going through it and hit that low spot to where you're at now, like, how do you see the differences in how your struggles then impacted Izzy and the relationship between the two of you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm incredibly lucky that I had someone who was willing to support me through all of this. I mean, again, like the generosity to just drive me to the appointments, and more than the actual work, to just listen to me all the time talking about how much I'm suffering. That's actually, you know, we used to have great conversations. We used to talk about philosophy. We used to watch movies. We used to people watch and laugh about stuff. And the only thing that I could talk about was the pain I was in. It was my only level, right? So, you know, again, that's something to recognize. You're not that nice to be around when you are just your thoughts. And something that's important to me is like the concept of identity, but the fact that our identity is flowing. So, you know, we can become people who we don't want to be, who don't resemble anything that we've ever imagined ourselves to being. We can just float into these personalities. But the same is true on the other side. You can float right out of them. You don't have to be the person who's always negative. You don't have to be the person who's always complaining. All of that is malleable. The human brain is incredibly elastic. And you can flow with the reality of who you are and just be present with who you are. And you can aspire to new things and truly believe you can become those new things. It's possible. So now we do have a great relationship, and we're back to doing all the things that we love doing. But I was a different person, and I really mean that. Like, I was not the same person around my family, around Izzy, around my friends. I was no fun at all. And I get it. Like, it's impossible to be. It's hard to be fun when you're in pain, because pain is a very, very unpleasant sensation. It's very difficult to be in pain well. And, you know, people take that differently. Like, I was a fairly outgoing person, so my friends really struggled with this new version of Jonah, this version of Jonah who is so negative and so dark and who doesn't turn up to things. I used to host things, and now I don't even go to them. And so it's, you know, there's a degree to which you want them to understand. And if they don't understand, which they might not, are you going to be bitter and resentful? Or are you going to go, they don't understand, that's okay, I'm going to just keep trying to be the person that aligns with my values. I'm going to be friendly. I'm going to be energetic. I'm going to be as energetic as I can be. I'm going to make a joke now and then, even though what's happening in my head is a huge amount of pain. I'm going to go lie down, but laugh at myself for it. I'm not going to go, I can't believe I'm here. Everybody turn off the sound. I'm going to go, oh, migraine hit again. I'm going to bed. Catch you in an hour. That kind of thing. You know, there's so many different ways you can have the exact same situation and just react a little differently. But you have to practice it. It's like anything. You have to practice it. You have to practice being who you want to be, or you won't. It doesn't happen automatically.
And I'm going to kind of go back and overlay the fact of celebrating what you're able to do, because it's like that, I imagine, was what kept you going to have this different relationship with Jonah or with Izzy.
Well, it's a different
well, you do have a different relationship. Right? Yeah, I was like, well, actually, you do have a different relationship with Jonah. It's like, because when you're in the midst of it and that pain is front and center, very different relationship than where you are now, where you have hope and you're persevering. We talked about meditation for a moment there. How has the meditation helped you? Or rather, let me ask you this, Jonah. If you've got somebody that's out there that's in that spot of like, I can't see beyond my pain, Jonah, it's overwhelming. This is what feels like my identity. How would meditation, you know, be able to help them? You said that was kind of the one thing you overlooked in using at that time. If somebody's new to it, how can they jump in and practice it and start finding that hope and that gratitude and being able to identify themselves differently mm-hmm. and not stay there?
There's a few different ways. I'll start with one, this concept of impermanence. So if you're in constant pain like I was, so you wake up, you've got a headache, you go to sleep, you've got a headache, it never, ever dissipates. What you can start to do is notice that it's not always the same level of pain. Once you notice that and you're having a really extreme flare-up, you can go, at some point, this won't be quite as bad. You know that the extremeness of your pain will pass because nobody is at a 10 out of 10 all day. So you just start to notice little things like that. Then you start to believe the fact that, okay, there is nuance to this. So I don't have to be thinking of myself as someone who's always in constant terrible pain. I can think of myself as someone who's sometimes in constant terrible pain and sometimes in bearable pain. Then when you're in bearable pain, you can meditate on that too. You can be curious about it. You can go, what is this pain like? Where am I feeling it? What are its characteristics? Does it make me hot or cold? Is it piercing or throbbing? You just explore it with curiosity. And curiosity is a neutral or positive emotion. And so you stop connecting pain with negativity. So you don't want to go, I'm thinking about this pain, it sucks so much, and that's my lens. It's a negative lens. You go, okay, maybe this pain is interesting. Maybe I can learn something about where it's coming from. Maybe I can explore this experience. So that's what you can do while you're in pain. The other thing you can do while you're in pain is focus on any sensation that's present along with the pain. Maybe there's a fan blowing on you. Maybe there's a sun ray shining on you. Maybe you can hear a dog barking or a bird chirping. Like, there's other things to explore. There's other sensations. And the final thing you can do is just watch your thoughts. In fact, this is the most important thing you can do. You can just go, I'm having a terrible day. Oh, I just thought that. You can watch that. You can be a third party. You don't have to be you. You can just watch the fact that things are going through your head and you just sit there. I mean, if you're in as much pain as I was, and I'm sure a lot of people are, you've got time on your hands. That's the one thing you've got. You've got a bit of time on your hands. You can just sit there and watch thoughts pass. And every time you say something extremely damaging, extremely negative, extremely pessimistic, just notice it. Doing this is very powerful, but you should also do it when you're not in as much pain, because that's how you build the muscle of recognition, of noticing. So that is a big thing you can do. Just believe that it'll pass at some point, even if it only passes through different magnitudes as opposed to going away altogether. And notice everything. Notice the properties of the pain. Notice the properties of your thoughts. And notice, the properties of even what you're thinking about your thoughts. You can keep on going up these different levels. Just explore. Try and have fun with it. It sounds stupid, but it is possible.
Yeah, I think it's a matter of believing in the possibility, you know, that hope that there is something different than what we feel we're relegated to and is going to be, you know, stand forever in time, right? You identify as less than because of what you're experiencing, and that becomes like almost like the poster child of your life, right? The limiting factor. Dude, Jonah, I love the fact that it's like you have talked about, you know, looking for the progress, however minuscule, holding on to it, being grateful for it, not identifying as, you know, what's being held back, but living life in the moment for whatever you can. And again, being grateful and celebrating in that.
If I could just quickly say, I mean, when you said living life as much as you can, I mean, that was a huge change in attitude because I stopped being like, I need this pain to go away to live my life. I decided to stubbornly live my life in spite of the pain. And when you accept that you have pain and that you can live a life with pain, then you don't have all this unnecessary suffering that comes with wanting it to go away. When you stop wanting it to go away, it frees you up to actually enjoy your life. And I mean, the core part of my story, I don't know if I've made it obvious on this podcast, but I'm in zero pain. I had 2 years of daily headaches from morning till night and I'm in zero pain. Now, I don't know if that can happen with every type of chronic pain. I know that there's tons and tons and tons of recovery stories and success stories across thousands of different types of pain. And all of these people have been doing similar things to me. So this is a tried and true method. I didn't invent this. It's called the mind-body connection. It can't cure cancer. It can't get rid of a brain tumor, but it can completely and utterly change the quality of your life. And my success story is, you know, I've gone down to zero, but a lot of people have gone down to 20% of what they had or 15% of what they had. And that's incredible, right? Like, there is no type of pain that you can't reduce because you're changing the way that your brain is responding. You're changing the way that the pain signals are interacting. So it doesn't matter what you have, your brain realizes you're not going to listen to those pain signals. And it has this Pavlovian effect. It just learns. It's a habit. It stops sending the pain signals if they don't do anything.
Yeah. There's a big, big shift when you change your perspective, your emotions, your just everything, your posture, your body, everything changes. And dude, the fact for 2 years, it's like it was unexpected and it was all-encompassing at one point to now, after intentional steps and celebrating along the way, being grateful for what there is, you know, to be at zero. I mean, dude, Jonah, even to like improve by 20%, like you said.
And this is without medication. I only got worse on medication.
Shh, you're not supposed to tell us that. That's one of the doctors don't want you to tell them without, you know, any prescriptions. It's like, hey, this is possible. Is it going to be your story? I don't know. But until you take that first step,
what have you got to lose?
Begin acting. Exactly. 100%. Dude, Jonah, there is so much more that we could talk about and so much like hope that is still wrapped up in both your journey out and what you're doing today. I mean, the whole thing. If guys are wanting to dig in deeper, how can they connect with you to, you know, see what you're doing, to kind of hear more of your story, and then to see like, hey, how did you actually do this? What's the step-by-step, Jonah? How can they connect with you?
So I have a podcast called The Overexamined Life, where I have these kind of stories that I tell for 10 minutes twice a week. And every single story has a philosophy from a great thinker built into it. And the idea is it's an everyday situation. Maybe it's a fight with your spouse. Maybe someone hits, you know, rear ends your car. They're everyday situations with philosophies of resilience, positivity, and joy as tools to combat the negativity that comes with it. And again, we talk about everything. We talk about financial distress, whatever anyone's going through. There's some great thinker out there who has gone through the same thing and found a way to enjoy their life anyway. And we also do interviews with, you know, really some of the most incredible people, like neuroscientists, PhD philosophers, Buddhist monks who have lived on mountains for 30 years, like some very, very cool people who are just thinking about the human condition and how to navigate it.
That's awesome. Jonah, thank you so much for sharing your story and giving us hope that, you know, when those challenges are in front of us and it's all we see, that's not all there is. So thank you for giving us the hope to continue pushing on despite what we've experienced and knowing that there is more available to us. So thank you very much, my friend.
And thank you, Mike. I mean, I really appreciate what you're doing. You're helping a lot of people, and it's a great reason to do something like this. Your project is a very good one.
I appreciate it. Thank you, my friend. Thanks so much, my friend, for joining me on another episode. If you found the information within the show helpful, please leave a review on the platform you're listening to. It helps raise the show's visibility so other men can join us in breaking free. See you on the next episode, and remember to continue putting yourself out there. Have a great one.